This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. Fight Back with Libby Znaimer on Zoomer Radio.
Welcome back. Gastrointestinal issues can range from abdominal pain to heartburn and vomiting. What's causing them? Well, sometimes it's nothing. Sometimes it can be a sign of something very serious. How can you tell the difference? And how can you prevent those gastrointestinal problems in the first place? We turn now to our house doctor, Zachary Levine. He is joining us to figure it out. He's going to take your calls and questions. So before we talk to Dr. Zach, the phone numbers, once again, 416-360-0740 or toll free 1-866-740-4740. Hi, Zach.
Hello, Libby.
How are you?
I'm well, thanks. You?
I'm fine.
Good. So, this is an important issue, and as you mentioned, you know, the gastrointestinal tract is a long tract. It's everything from the in point, the mouth, to the out point, which is basically the rectum, the anus, and it's obviously very important. I mean, it's where we get a lot of almost all of our nutrients. We take in our nutrients, and they are absorbed, and then we eliminate the waste that we don't need. And it's actually, you know, very, very common reason why people go to the doctor is issues related to this gastrointestinal tract. And often it's one of those systems that we don't notice that much when it's working well, but when it's when there's a problem. And one example of a very common problem that is responsible for a couple of million visits, this is in the States, a couple of million visits per year to the doctor, is constipation. And so one of the questions that often gets asked is, what's normal? You know, how often, what's the normal amount or frequency of going to the bathroom for bowel movements? And it can actually, the normal range is actually between 3 bowel movements a day and 3 per week. So it's quite a wide range. And what's normal for one person is not normal for someone else. So we all hopefully know what's normal for us, and we also know, you know, when there's a big change and when we have discomfort and when we're having a lot of problem going to the bathroom, then it's worth coming in and trying to figure out what the problem is.
GERD or acid reflux is a big problem for a lot of people. Does it have mostly to do with what we eat or what?
Well, yeah, you're absolutely right. So GERD, gastroesophageal reflux disease, is very, very common. And in fact, it's one of those things that can sometimes mimic a heart attack, you know, because one of the symptoms of GERD, usually it's upper abdominal pain, middle abdominal pain, but it can cause the acid. So basically what it is normally there is a valve between the esophagus and the stomach. So we swallow, it goes down the esophagus into the stomach. And it's supposed to be a one-way valve so that food can get in, but the very strong acid from the stomach can't get out, so it can't go back the wrong way, backwards. But sometimes there's a little bit of leakiness of that valve, and what happens is you get the leaking, and you can actually sense it. When there's a bit of acid that goes back up into the esophagus, we sense it as pain, as burning, as nausea. Sometimes we can actually taste the acidity in our mouth. And it's very common. And so, and in terms of what the causes are, there are a few food causes. So things like peppermints and alcohol can be associated, caffeinated beverages, including caffeine, and including tea and coffee. Those can also be associated with it. But there's also just a congenital component in that some of us, our one-way valves just become a little bit leaky at some point. And that's something that you can't control that well. The things that people can do is, aside from avoiding the foods that I mentioned, and there are some other ones too that we could talk about. But the other thing is, after eating, it's important to not lie flat on your back right away. So that's why people recommend that you don't have a big meal and then lie down flat, because it's just gravity. So basically, if you're standing up, it's harder for the acid to basically go back up back up into your esophagus, as opposed to if you lie flat, it's easier for that to happen. And there's a few different things that can cause it, including it's also related to this famous bacteria, H. pylori, which is only famous over the past 10 years or so, which we doctors didn't realize until about 10 or 15 years ago that it's related to acid reflux and also related to ulcers, which are ulcers in the stomach and the esophagus. So
I thought ulcers are always H. pylori.
Well, they are pretty much always H. pylori, but there are some other factors that can increase your likelihood. So one of the most common is taking anti-inflammatory medications. So anti-inflammatories, and that includes ibuprofen, which is Advil or Motrin. It can include other things like naproxen or diclofenac. There's a whole bunch of them, but taking those regularly can irritate the stomach lining and can give you a gastritis, which is inflammation. And then especially in the presence of that H. pylori, you're much more likely to have an ulcer, and you're also much more likely to have bleeding. There are some other things as well, but that's the most common thing, is the H. pylori plus the anti-inflammatory medications, which can be very hard on the stomach.
Well, there's another huge issue with all of this, these are sort of, you can have these what I would call vague gastrointestinal symptoms, but sometimes it can be very serious, and certainly that happened to me. I was having symptoms like that right before I was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. That's one of the problems with pancreatic cancer is there isn't much in the way of symptoms, and the ones there are usually kind of nebulous. So, Zach, how can people, you know, get a sense of whether what they're experiencing is something serious?
You make a great point, and it's exactly the problem. And that's the problem with certain cancers, like pancreatic cancer. There's some other ones. The one that comes to mind is sort of ovarian cancer, things that can grow for a while and just cause sort of vague symptoms, like, for example, fullness or nausea or a little bit of abdominal discomfort that people just write off because, you know, frankly, we all get these things from time to time and they usually pass. The things that are red flags, and it's not always obvious, you know. So one thing I do say is if you're having persistent symptoms that aren't normal for you, is it's worth getting it checked out, you know, at least giving a call to your doctor if you're able to do that, or making an appointment just to see if it's lasting. Because the vast majority, we see very, very often people come in with nausea, vomiting, abdominal pain, and the vast majority of those sort of gastroenteritis, or if you eat something that is contaminated, they're quite short-acting usually, like even under 24 hours, the vast majority of them. And even a gastroenteritis that people will catch when they're traveling or whatnot, those shouldn't usually last more than a few days. So if something, number one, if it's different from normal for you. Number two is if it's persisting. And even I would say if it's persisting more than a couple of days and it doesn't feel right to you, and there's no good reason for it either. So if you're having, certainly if you're having a lot of pain. The other things that are worrisome are blood, you know, blood in your stool, blood in your vomit, weight loss, fever, chills, lack of appetite. All those things are concerning, that it's not just sort of a, you ingested something contaminated, it's making you sick, and it's going to pass quickly.
Okay, Dr. Zach, let's give the numbers out once again so people can call to ask you questions about gastrointestinal issues, but they can actually ask you questions about anything that is on their minds. Dr. Zach is here to take your calls and questions. The numbers 416-360-0740, toll free 1-866-740-4740. Again, I am here with our house doctor, Zachary Levine. We're talking about gastrointestinal issues, which many of us experience, and also the problem of trying to figure out if it is something serious or just, you know, the kind of thing that happens. And Zach, sometimes you have to go through a lot of tests, because I remember going through a lot of tests when I first started experiencing these symptoms. And at first I thought perhaps they missed something. I had, you know, what was called an upper GI series. Yep. And I was tested for H. pylori, which can take a very long time, by the way, because it takes a month some kind of breath test, and it takes a month to get the result. But then I was told that actually those tests would not have detected it. So what about, you know, how do you know you're even getting the right test?
Well, it's a good question. A test is only as good as what it's, number one, what it's looking for, and of course it depends on the operator as well. You need a good operator, but yeah, for example, what you're mentioning, an upper GI. So there's a couple of things we do if we suspect it's something to do with the esophagus or the stomach. One is something called a barium swallow, where you swallow this contrast and they do X-rays. Another is a gastroscopy, where they put a camera down and they take a look in. But absolutely, that will not show. That only shows the esophagus and the stomach, and maybe the upper part of the small bowel. But it's not an imaging test to look deeper. And as you know, the pancreas is towards the back. You know, it's a retroperitoneal organ. So even if you, another test, which often we will get for people with abdominal pain, is an ultrasound. And the ultrasound is very good for looking at the liver. It's good for looking at the gallbladder, a little bit for the stomach. But again, the pancreas is deeper, and so you really, often you don't see it well, and you really need a CAT scan or an MRI to look deeper so you see the pancreas, and that's the issue. We go with the clues and common things being common. When people come in with upper abdominal pain, the truth is usually we're thinking more stomach and liver and gallbladder, and so they may get investigated for those three things, but if we don't look deeper, we can miss. The problem is, if the doctor's not looking for it, you're not going to find it.
Yeah, and a lot of doctors don't see much of it. So I think one message I would like to get out to people is that, you know, if you're having something and it's not normal for you and the medication they give you for GERD or whatever doesn't work, keep at it till you find out what the problem is.
Yeah, I agree. I agree absolutely. And the other thing is, I should say, because I mentioned constipation earlier, and it is very common. But it's really a diagnosis of exclusion. You know, you can never say, oh, in someone who has a change in their bowel habit, anyone, especially over 50, but anyone generally, if you have a change in your bowel habit and going to the bathroom, especially if it's associated with the other things I mentioned, weight loss, change in appetite, blood, it needs to be checked out. And we as doctors should never just say, oh, you know, it's just constipation. That is, once you've ruled everything else out and you do an imaging test and you see someone is full of stool, you know, fine, it's constipation, you can treat that. But we should never be saying, oh, it's just constipation, if it's not normal. Some people are chronically constipated, and they know it, and they know there are certain things they can do, eating more fiber, drinking more water, getting more exercise, fruits and vegetables. But if it's not normal for you, like you're saying, get it checked out and be persistent if it's not if you're not getting the answers that you think you deserve and should get.
Okay, let's go to the phones. We've got Mary in Burlington. Hello, Mary.
Hello. I'm Mary from Burlington, and I just came home and put the radio on. I always listen to your show.
Thank you.
And I am suffering from stomach ache, but it seems to be coming like maybe once or twice a year. Mm. And it lasts a long time, maybe even 10 days or more. Mm. And then it just goes away.
Huh.
And I had a couple of tests before, a good couple of tests. And thank God nothing showed.
Yeah.
But it's still, when it starts hurting me, it really worries me.
Yeah, and Mary, I certainly can appreciate why it worries you, because for 10 days is a long time to have stomach pains. We look at a whole bunch of things. One of the things that's important is where. So is it your upper stomach or your lower or one side or another?
No, it's the lower.
It's a lower area, eh?
Yes.
Okay. And so based on that, you know, we basically divide it into quadrants. So if it's the lower part, we're thinking more the lower bowel or it could be bladder.
Yes,
or it
it's
could
exactly
be
around where you bend.
Yeah.
That part.
And so Mary, you've had some tests. They did some imaging, like a ultrasound or a scan.
Oh, my God.
Something?
That's been going on for easily 30 or more years.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
I do suffer from anxiety.
Okay.
So I don't know whether that would contribute to it.
Well, certainly anxiety can contribute to anything. One of the things I always ask is, do you find there's a relationship? Like when you're feeling more anxious or you're under more stress, do you find there's a relationship that you get the stomach aches more, or that there isn't one really?
Yes, I do.
Okay. So, again, you know, that's something that we always have to rule out all the life-threatening things before we say something is anxiety, that the cause of something is really just anxiety. But, however, it certainly is, when there's a relationship like that, it certainly is suggestive. And definitely things that are caused by anxiety, usually you can find some relationship that, you know, whenever someone is really getting a lot of anxiety or stress, that they get the symptom, that it certainly suggests that. And especially if you have had complete testing. The other thing that's reassuring, certainly, Mary, is that you've had it for so many years and you're still well. That's obviously a very good thing.
Well, my diet is very good. I don't eat a lot of meat. Mm-hmm. I eat fish. I eat lots of fruits and vegetables. And I'm not a drinker. Here and there, I have a little drink.
Mm-hmm.
And I do exercise a lot. And
all
I
good.
Also notice that when I do exercise at least 4 or 5 times a week,
yeah.
I feel all over much better.
Well, I think that's good advice to anyone. Mary, thanks a lot for your call.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Okay, we've got Pat in Bob Cajun. And Pat, you want to talk about TIAs, the so-called mini-strokes.
Yes, is that all right if I
ask? Sure, absolutely.
Okay,
please.
Thank you. Dr. Zach, recently a friend of mine experienced what they thought was a TIA.
Yeah.
They brought her immediately to the hospital. She remained overnight. She recovered completely. She was asked to return in 48 hours for a battery of tests, which she did.
Yeah.
She also went with a Holter monitor. After she had her tests on the 2 days later, she was told that she had experienced global amnesia.
Oh,
and
yes.
That it was as a result of low-dose aspirin.
Oh, wow.
Now that...
Pat, do you have your radio on? Because we're getting feedback.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's not off, but it's turned right down. I'll turn it right off.
Oh, okay. Okay, you know what, Pat? My operator is telling me that it's a bad line. Have you asked your question?
Yes, I have. Yes.
Okay, so we're going to say goodbye to you and listen for Dr. Zach's answer, okay?
Okay,
thanks.
You then.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah, so thanks, Pat, for your question, and it's a very good one. And I'm glad you brought up this transient global amnesia, because we actually see it. It's actually more common than people are aware of. And you're asking about the relationship between aspirin and transient global amnesia. So just to say, transient global amnesia is basically it's a clinical syndrome in which people have a loss of memory for several hours, a distinct portion of time, so we're talking 3 or 4 hours, where people lose they can be somewhat confused during that time. It resolves completely. They have a whole battery of tests afterwards to make sure they didn't have a stroke or a TIA. It's all negative, and then they go completely back to normal, and the neurologists examine them, make sure nothing else is going on, and they call it transient global amnesia, which is just as the name suggests. You have this total amnesia for a few hours, and then it gets back to normal. Now, the question is there a relationship between that and aspirin? And to be honest with you, I am not aware of a relationship between the use of aspirin and transient global amnesia. I can research it, but it's certainly not. I see it a fair bit, and I work with neurologists, and it's certainly not a classic thing where they say, "Oh, this is, you know, this person." It's because of aspirin. It's not a common relationship.
Okay,
so I don't
Zach.
Think everyone. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's try to get a few more calls in before
sure.
we have to go. Vicky and Markham. Hi, Vicky. Hello? Vicky, are you there? One last chance. Okay, she doesn't. Hello? All right. Issa in Toronto. Hi, Issa.
Hello, hi.
Hi.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. I'm going to try to make this as short as possible. You were mentioning H. pylori. I was diagnosed with H. pylori. I did take the multi-pack, I think it was what it's called, the antibiotics.
Yes.
Had the breath test. I was cleared. But I've been still getting a lot of pain in my stomach and a lot of gas. I actually had to get an ultrasound this weekend because I do have fibroids as well for my OBGYN to take a look at my fibroids. And the technician actually said it was hard to see because of all the overlaying gas that I have trapped in my stomach. Wake up in the morning, I'm constantly burping. If I drink a glass of water, I'm burping for about sometimes 10 minutes to the point where it makes me feel sick. And I had an endoscopy done. They checked for celiac disease, no celiac disease. I found out that I was lactose intolerant.
Mm-hmm.
The doctor suggested going on a FODMAP diet.
Mm-hmm.
I tried that, but nothing seems to be letting up. And my stomach is quite distended with a lot of pain sometimes. And my bowel movements are regular. No blood in my urine.
Mm-hmm.
No vomiting. So I don't know. Can you advise?
yeah. It's a tough one, Issa. Thanks for your question. And yes, so I mean, once you're treated, it sounds like number one, you were treated for the H. pylori. You had the breath test. It sounds like it's gone. So yeah, I think you're right that part of it is taken care of, but you're still having a lot of symptoms.
Yes.
And it sounds like the workup you're having, by the way, is appropriate as well, like the testing, because you can get a lot of these symptoms. Especially the gas can be from if you're not digesting things properly.
Right.
Gas happens when oxygen and nitrogen collect in the digestive tract, and so some foods make it, but also sometimes swallowing air can make it. And in people like you said, people with celiac can get it. You don't have that lactose intolerance, so I assume now you're avoiding lactose.
Yes, and completely staying away.
Yeah, so that's good. I mean, because that one can also. You know, that can give you some of the symptoms of a lactose intolerant or to have more gas.
Right. What's your opinion on a FODMAP diet?
Well, the FODMAP diet, I know they use it specifically primarily with the IBS, the irritable.
And I was actually the doctor diagnosed.
I'm just going to chime in here. We've really got to wrap it up for news. So, Zach, if you can give us the 20-second wrap-up, please.
Okay, yeah. So FODMAP diet is good. People can just Google it to get an idea of what it is, but it certainly has been shown in people with irritable bowel syndrome to be helpful.
Right.
I think if I certainly think in your case it would be worth a trial of it if your doctor thinks it's a good idea. If that doesn't work though, I certainly recommend. I think you have to keep going back, and they can continue to work it up and see what's causing it, because there is something causing it. You know. And
that
takes a while.
Thank you.
Okay,
thank you
Issa.
So much,
thanks
Dr.
for your call, Zach Levine, our house doctor. Thank you so much for that.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.